Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Nathaniel Lee. I represent Walter Morgan, who was the plaintiff and also he's the appellant. May it please the court, in this case, we feel that the district court committed error in granting summary judgment based on the fact that the statute of limitation has run on Mr. Morgan's claim. We feel that the court committed error because of a number of issues and the facts in this case rings out that the fact that the statute of limitations should not have started to run until April of 2009. And here's why. Mr. Morgan, in this case, for his entire adult life, used one accounting firm to prepare his taxes and give him tax advice. When he won the lottery in 1986, he continued to use the same accounting firm. When he moved out of the state of Indiana to Washington, he continued to use the same accounting firm. For all these years, the accounting firm made the same mistake. But the problem that why the court erred, Your Honor, is that in 2008, she prepared an Ohio income tax return. She prepared it in 2007 and 2006, 2005, when he lived in Washington. So when Mr. Morgan had a legal obligation to file an Ohio tax return, she didn't file one. When he no longer had a legal obligation to file the tax return, she didn't file it. Now,
Mr. Lee, let me just say, I mean, I didn't find her performance too impressive, but there are two issues, it seems to me. One of them, a more formal issue, is whether the district court correctly decided to use Indiana law for the statute of limitations here as opposed to Ohio law. I know you argue that the Ohio connections are more substantial, although Indiana has now a multi-factor test and all of her malpractice, if there was any, happened in Indiana. But actually then there's a practical question, which is when all was said and done, it seems to me after the settlement, Mr. Morgan wound up paying the state of Ohio about half of what he would have owed them if correct returns had been filed all that time. So even if this case had been filed in Ohio and the Ohio court had used its own limitations period, it's hard for me to see how he's really, aside from the great annoyance of it all, how he's really been injured.
That's a good point, Your Honor, but that's I saw that in the appellee's brief, but that's not the actual evidence. That's actually disputed. Mr. Morgan's contention is that had she done his taxes correctly, he wouldn't owe any taxes at all. Because during some of the years in Ohio, there was no requirement that you even prepare and file Ohio tax return for lottery proceeds. And then you got to remember is that they took out withholding on his taxes each year. So he was damaged in the sense. Now, the third part about this.
The state of Ohio, though, as I understand, ultimately thought he owed some $450,000, and then they loaded a lot of interest and penalties on top of it that ballooned it way up, but then that got eliminated. So he winds up with the $250,000. Now, I'm not in a position to say whether the state of Ohio was right or not about that $450-some estimate, but It just seems to me it's not at all clear he's been injured by this.
Well, Your Honor, it's actually a mistake to go into what goes on into a negotiation and settlement. He was actually initially assessed with $2 million, which just kept going up. And if he contested, it would have been over $3 million for a person that's near 80 years old.
I don't doubt that that was horrifying to him. I really don't. But I guess I was just sort of thinking of this at a practical level. He did find somebody excellent who got it all settled. I look to me like in a very favorable way to him, perhaps for some of the reasons that you're suggesting, the withholding or what have you.
But anyway,
why don't you turn to the choice of law issue, because it seems to me under the Indiana Supreme Court's Hubbard decision, there really is a multi-factor test on whose law applies.
Well, our problem with the choice of law issue is that only the state of Ohio, in this case, actually was the state in which she failed to file the tax return. And then there's two components, though, Judge. even before you get to the choice of law issue, we're saying that the district court erred because we were within the one-year statute of limitation. See, what's overlooked here is that in April of 2008, when she filed an Ohio tax return, that would have triggered probably the state of Ohio making the assessment in the first instant. See, if you take the district court analysis and you stop in your tax year 2003, why would Ohio even know who Mr. Morgan is in the first instant? 5 years go by, nothing happens, but what draws their attention to this, obviously, is the fact that she started filing Ohio tax return. So before you get there, reason why the court shouldn't have granted summary judgment because in April of 2008, when she files her Ohio tax return, the people in Ohio are saying, why is a guy from Washington State filing Ohio's tax return? This doesn't make sense. Any reasonable person is going to probably start investigating. So she made the mistake, and then her conduct resulted in the investigation of our client that led to the tax assessment. That's why we feel very strongly that the district court erred because we had continuous misconduct. And then, to make it worse, she alerted them of her misconduct by continuing to file the wrong return.
So you're looking at this continuous representation theory, but I thought that had to do only with the same matter in which the malpractice occurred, and that was way back in 2003.
That's an excellent point, Your Honor. The continuous representation doctrine is applicable in this case, but the gravamen of this doctrine, as cited by the district court correctly, is that it came from the New York decision in the Ackerman case. Ackerman is right on point on this narrow issue. In Ackerman, the court told the statute of limitation because it dealt with a tax deduction issue that the accounting firm failed to take into consideration. So this is identical to the source case that caused this whole theory to come into existence. Indiana belatedly adopted this theory later on, but this theory came from Ackerman, and under Ackerman, we're within the statute of limitation. Plus the fact that he goes back to the district court says that the last act of negligence was in 2003, but that's not correct. The last act of negligence was in October 2008 and in April 2008. So even under Indiana one-year statute law, we timely filed the complaint, and so under the continuous representation doctrine, we're only talking about the taxpayer seeking one type of representation for his entire adult life from the same accounting firm. They prepared taxes. They remitted his taxes each time he had a problem, the same firm. In this case here, we can't forget the fact that this gentleman signed a power of attorney. She agreed to remedy the tax problem, and she didn't. Now, the most important thing about this, Your Honor, is that Mrs. Fenimore, the appellee, says he should have got a better deal than the $250,000. So that tells you there's a question of fact. Now, when you start negotiating a tax bill, there's a thousand things could come into consideration. Our contention here is that this is a question that the jury should decide. It's clear in this case, this case is fraught with malpractice. You don't have simple malpractice, you have gross malpractice, because it would have been simple if you just forgot the mistake, but then you compound the problem by alerting the taxing authority that there is a gross mistake. Finally, we filed this under seal because she made mistakes in the federal return, but that's not before this court. But that statute of limitation would have expired on the federal issue until April of this year. So because all these issues would result in harm to the taxpayer, and he timely filed it, in our opinion, Judge, in a timely manner. At no point in time did he ever delay seeking a remedy here. When he got the bill, this same day or next day, he was on the phone talking to her about it. Right away. He's, my goodness, I'm having a heart attack. $2 million bill here. Help me out. And immediately she said, I'll take care of it. Not a problem. But what does she do? She loses a power of attorney. She said, send me the power of attorney. She loses it.
Well, I mean, I certainly, as I said, I'm not real impressed with her performance, but that's really not our issue right now. So if you'd like to save a minute for your rebuttal, I'll...
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Brown?
Morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the Court, my name is Mike Brown. I'm an attorney with Keitlinger & Gray in Indianapolis. We're here to represent Ann Fenimore and Fenimore & Associates in this matter. I was a little taken aback by the presentation because of the emphasis on a mistake in April of 2008. I don't recall in dealing with the summary judgment pleadings in this case any discussion about a mistake in April of 2008. I did notice it in the reply brief that was filed after we had briefed the case. And let me address it what I think is very simply. There's nothing in the record to show that there was an error made in filing an Ohio tax return in 2008. Ms. Fenimore testified that Mr. Morgan owned property in Ohio. He sold the property. He had a gain on the property, and he owed taxes in the state of Ohio on the property that he sold in the state of Ohio. That's in her deposition. There's no designated evidence from a lawyer in Ohio or a CPA who's rendered an opinion that there was anything wrong with her filing a return in 2008. So I see that as another red herring in this case.
So I'm just looking at the complaint. Is it your position that he didn't allege that the 2008 conduct was negligent or that it wasn't brought up in summary judgment?
That would be our position. I did not see anywhere in the complaint anything about that issue.
All right.
Similarly, the federal tax issues that were alluded to briefly, I didn't see that even in the briefs submitted to you.
No, I didn't see
either.
Much.
When did the annuity company file something?
I'm sorry?
He bought an annuity, right? Something rather, and then they filed some kind of return?
They did file.
It was earlier than that.
Earlier than that. Ann did file returns for him in Ohio at the time that he sold this property in Ohio. That was after the lottery winning payments had ceased.
I know. Well, was it? It was after whatever it is, 8? What is 98 or whatever it was? What did we talk? 2008? What was the date?
In 2003, he got the last payment from the lottery.
Then the annuity filed something. That was before 2008, when we're talking about here.
That's correct.
Whoever alerted Ohio was probably when they filed.
In April 2004, she and he met, and he signed a federal tax return. No state tax return for the state of Ohio was prepared at that time. That's when the last return relative to the lottery proceeds would have had to have been prepared and submitted to the state of Ohio. So our position that 3 years from that date, under the statute of limitations in Indiana, the time to prepare those returns had expired. In terms of your question, Judge Wood, about the state of Ohio, the law of Ohio versus the law of Indiana, the conflict of laws issue, in reality, by the time the claim was made in 2003, Mr. Morgan had actually moved to the state of Washington and was a resident of the state of Washington, where they have no income tax, so that was probably a good move on his part.
But I was just, this case gets filed in the Southern District of Indiana. The district court properly recognizes under Claxon that it's to apply the choice of law rules of Indiana. It looks to Hubbard. It looks to other things. And the question is which state, I'll grossly overgeneralize, has a greater interest in this. Is this really an Indiana matter such that you should use the Indiana statute of limitations and substantive Indiana law, or is this really an Ohio matter? The district judge thinks it's really an Indiana matter, and I understood Mr. Lee's brief to be saying, no, it isn't. It's really all about Ohio, because Ohio has a more generous statute of limitations on these tax matters than Indiana does.
That would be correct.
The case could go forward. If she should have been applying Ohio law, as she certainly could have done, that happens all the time, then the case perhaps needs to go forward.
Right. And we begin from the premise that the plaintiff pled in the complaint that the malpractice occurred in the state of Indiana, in Richmond, Indiana, because that's where Ann Fenimore's office was. That's where Mr. Morgan and Ann always met whenever they discussed matters. While Ann at one time was licensed in Ohio, that license was inactive. She was an Indiana CPA performing services for a long period of time an Indiana resident. At the very end, he'd moved to Washington. All the work that she did was done in her office in the state of Ohio, of Indiana. So it's our view, and I think it was the district court's view, that Indiana has the most significant interest in supervising its CPAs and seeing to it that the services provided are provided consistent with Indiana law, and a balancing of interests between Mr. Morgan, who knew every year that the state of Ohio was withholding monies from him and that the state of Ohio took the position that they that he owed them money and yet never asked about an Ohio accountant or an Ohio lawyer, gee, should I be doing something over there? Should I be filing returns over there? He simply continued to go to Ann and had Ann prepare federal tax returns for him without preparing Ohio returns. All that happened in Indiana, and it happened in Indiana because he was an Indiana resident, and he chose to go an Indiana accountant to have that work done for him.
I mean, the thing that's confusing me about that, it's routine beyond all description for people to have to file a couple of different state returns. You know, sometimes it's because you've earned money out of state, or sometimes it's because you live part of the year in one state and part of the year in another state. So I can't imagine a CPA being buffaloed by the idea that maybe you filed both an Indiana and an Ohio return.
And actually what happened in this instance, I think the evidence reflects, Mr. Morgan did not have Ann Fenimore as his accountant forever. He had someone else who was his accountant. At some point in time, Ann purchased the accounting firm of that business, and she began to be his accountant. That was about 1991. So 5 years had already gone by when he didn't file any Ohio returns, and when he came to Ann, they continued that practice that had been the practice for a long period of time. Mr. Morgan knew the state of Ohio was withholding money from him. Ann knew the state of Ohio was withholding money from him. They proceeded on a course where they were not going to file Ohio returns. It wasn't a decision by one or the other. Mutually, that's what was done. She'd have been happy to do a return for him if he'd have asked her to do it, but he did not.
What was done with the withheld money all that time?
There was a large sum withheld the first year. In fact, Mr. Morgan testified about how angry he was about the first withholding, and he thought it was wrong. And then there was about $21,000 withheld each year up to the last year, and a smaller amount was withheld the last year, 2003.
Is all that accumulating somewhere? He didn't get a refund, did he?
I'm going to assume that he got credit for that when the state of Ohio did his calculation. The suggestion made by my colleague that we don't really know whether he owed $400,000 or not it misses the fact that in this evidence that's before this court, that was before the district court, there's nothing from an Ohio lawyer who handled that matter or from a CPA that says, well, he really didn't owe all that money, but he wound up having to pay it because he was in a fix. The court has no evidence before it other than the chart from the state of Ohio, which the plaintiff provided to us, that shows how much he owed, which was, as described, upwards of $400,000. The reality is whatever choice he made about not filing in Ohio turned out to be a good choice because he paid substantially less in taxes over the years than he otherwise would have paid, paid no interest and no penalties. It frankly turned out to be a good call. Well, we believe the district court analyzed the issues before it thoroughly and correctly, and we'd ask that you affirm her decision.
All right, thank you. I think you have a minute, Mr. Lee. Yes, you have to be very quick. It's been kind of a long day.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, the argument about the taxes, Your Honor, is a red herring. Judge Maine was correct in the sense that they did take a substantial amount of taxes out, but the problem is, what the record reflects is that only Ms. Fenimore had all the tax records, and that's one of the impediments he had over all these years. The second part that was a flaw in his argument has to do with Ms. Allen. Geneva Allen was the predecessor accountant that did his taxes from the 70s up to the 80s, but Mrs. Fenimore worked at the firm for a couple of years before she purchased it. And yes, there were some mistakes made, but this is all kind of cloudy because it wasn't every year that the state of Ohio required that they have a income tax be taken against the lottery proceeds. There was a couple, 1 or 2 years, I think, was a grace period. This settlement is the result of a lot of work and not necessarily predicated upon the taxes and penalties. I don't know what the factors were that went into that, but I know it was a long, detailed process and a lot of work by a very good law firm. The bottom line is this. The statute of limitation in this case should not have run because the court should have allowed us to present evidence to show what happened in 2007, 2008. Today he says that the record, he talks about this property in Ohio, but my point of this is that this is evidence that we should be able to present to a jury. The court, in its order, says that the last tax act was 2003, and that's incorrect. And so as a result, we respectfully request that this court reverses this decision and send the case back so we could develop the case on the merit.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. Take the case under advisement.